Welcome to the Inclusion First podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaseva, your honorary First Inclusion Project podcast host. Welcome back to another episode of the First Inclusion Project podcast, College Takeover, All Things Inclusive Edition, where I'm having thoughtful conversations with some amazing college pals with the hopes of inspiring you all to engage in conversations and actions that will create a more inclusive world. Today, we're talking about Diaspora Wars with my guest, Garitha, a.k.a. G.
I'm Garitha. I go to Loyola University as of right now. I'm a sophomore majoring in international relations with a double minor in anthropology and French, and I am a first-gen American citizen whose parents are from the DRC, which is the Democratic Republic of the Congo, best country in the world, period.
Awesome. We're going to hop right into this conversation. It's going to be great. So, G, Diaspora Wars can be loosely described as cross-cultural arguments among different ethnicities of African people where discontentment with each other for various reasons occur, often bringing to light the negative stereotypes believed about other Black groups. An example would be that Africans speak properly while Black Americans do not and are lazy. These stereotypes are brought up from global white supremacy and anti-Blackness. Growing up in a Congolese and Zambian household, I was introduced to some of these negative stereotypes, and as I grew up, I had to have a lot of conversations with my family about their viewpoints. It was influential to the point where I'm literally so ashamed of it to this day. I remember in third grade, I said that I was not Black. I was African, and one of my friends who was also Black literally looked at me and said, "Okay, but you're still Black." And that was the day everything changed for me. I didn't know the magnitude or extent of what I realized right then and there at 8 years old, but I did know for a fact that because I have a darker complexion, that would be the first thing anyone saw before I opened my mouth. What was your experience like growing up in your household?
Okay, so growing up, I did have a similar experience to you. Unfortunately, my parents were very prejudiced towards Black Americans. And luckily, I didn't inherit any of that. I did not see color until I started going to school and people were like, "Well, you're Black." And I didn't know that. I thought I was brown, first of all, because I was like, I've never seen no Black.
I thought I was brown too. I remember in preschool, I was coloring and, you know, we were doing self-portraits. So I got the brown Crayola crayon. I colored myself in, and this kid said, "You are not brown, you're Black," and gave me the black crayon. And I remember I said, "You see my skin tone? I'm brown, okay? I'm a brown skin girl."
I thought the white people were pink. So I was like, where are these colors coming from? Where are these concepts coming from? And you know, when you go out to like parties and stuff or like social events and it's predominantly white, but you see another Black person and y'all have like that telekinetic like connection, like, you know, yeah, we in this together. We understand each other. I always had that, but I also felt like my parents tried to make me disconnect from other Black people just because we had different upbringings. And like, I remember one time my parents, they owned an African store, and back in the day it was in the city, and we were hanging around a bunch of Black people that were living around the area, and they would come to the store, buy drinks. And I had friends around my age, and I remember them like, we was like this, we was tight. And then one day my mom was just like, "Stop hanging out with those people, stop being friends with them." And I was like, "Well, what did they do? Like, we're all friends, what's going on?" And it took me literally years to break that stereotype in their heads, because having immigrant parents, especially from Africa, they don't see racism because, well, everybody over there looks the same. Like, everybody right. over there is Black. So they're not going to have some kind of superiority of, you know, white supremacy. That's how they think. But in reality, they try to base their entire being off of what whiteness looks like. So Absolutely. They associate these certain behaviors with what whiteness is. And in reality, whiteness and Blackness shouldn't even exist, first of all. And it's subjective to everyone. But they associate these negative connotations to Blackness, and that's what they want to separate their children from. So I had to really break that to them, like, hey, being ghetto just doesn't belong to just Black people. You know, anybody can be ghetto. Anybody can be sophisticated. Anybody can be proper. Anybody can have class. So I had to break that to my parents very early on. And I also had to play a game of catch up, because I just felt like I was distant. Like, I wasn't Black enough to be friends with the Black kids, but I also wasn't white, so I couldn't be friends with the white kids. And growing up in a predominantly white school, it was difficult. It was really tough. And in the household, like, all you know is being African. You don't know anything else besides that. So I had to find out by myself what it meant to be Black in America and what it meant to be Black everywhere else, because it's different everywhere.
Oh, ooh, I felt that. Felt that, because, you know, that's the problem with stereotypes. People want to attach mm-hmm. all these different, you know, narratives to specific groups of people when anyone can fit the
right.
You know, when anyone can fit the description mm-hmm. of that. Anyone can be, you know, professional. Anyone can be ghetto. It's the fact that, like you're saying, it's what we based it off of. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, one of the most difficult things was having to navigate literally three different worlds. And then on top
right,
of that,
right.
You're talking about the intergenerational family members, because I felt like cracking it down with the parents was one thing, but the grandparents,
the aunties, ooh, they was
That is a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think this really stems from for them when they were back home? Was it the media?
Bruh, I didn't even...
Was it the things that they were watching? Like, where do you think that they...
I've been trying to find the answer. And as I'm growing up, I realize there's so many different factors as to why Africans have this set mentality towards Black Americans. Like you said, it is the media. A lot of it is the media. You see, like, the only type of representation that Black people get in the media and movies and TV shows are negative ones. Only gangsters, only thugs, only supporting characters. That's all you see them as. And, like, worldwide, our reputation, people know Black culture, because Black culture is the most prominent, most rich, most resilient culture in the world.
And we influence
American
a exactly. lot of things.
Exactly, especially American Black culture. It is worldwide, like, everybody knows it, but people pick and choose what to acknowledge as positive culture as Black culture and what, you know, they just associate it with as American culture, when in reality it's actually just Black culture. So a lot of the times it's the media. You see shootouts and stuff on TV and everything like that. Africans, that's all they see, and that's what they associate, as well as the fact that, like, I read an article somewhere that was talking about, like, the difference within the diaspora, especially between Africans and Black Americans. And from an African standpoint, you know, you have, like, Africans have a superiority complex. I'm gonna say that. Older generation Africans have a superiority complex, and they're very, very proud of their culture. So seeing, you know, people who look like you who don't have any sense of their culture whatsoever, and you yourself have a superiority complex, you're obviously going to think that you're better than that person, because you know where you come from and you rep where you come from heavy. So a lot of the times, like, it's just a whole lot of who's better and who's not. And Africans think that they're better because, well, we know where we come from. We know who we are. Black Americans don't. they're phonies, they're fake, whatever it is, da 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 da. And then on top of the superiority complex, you add in the internalized white supremacy inside with the impression that Black Americans don't work, they're lazy, all they know how to do is kill each other, there's no unity in their communities. And it's like, how are you seeing this from outside of the club? You can't even get in.
Right.
Like, you gonna listen to the white man who imperialized your country and killed millions of you and is still taken from your country all the time? So it's like, dang, like, they, like, white people, like, the colonizers, they really did a really good job at disconnecting the community in general and just separating us on the most trivial things ever. Like, it's really crazy. But most of the time, it's the media that plays a sense in why we're the way we are.
And the division is actually insane considering the fact that you Africans immigrated to this country. And I mean, because I've had a lot of questions, right, with my family members and regarding like, why, then why didn't you just stay, you know, in the country if it was so much better, people are so much better. But that's a topic for a different day. Where I was going with it is the simple fact that in this country, when we get here, the system, the people, America is not looking at us as, oh, look, it's the Africans. We're just Black. That's the only, you know, thing that you see. You're grouped up just like everybody else, because the only time people will know is because, you know, you have an accent. And for us being the children, we don't really, we don't really carry that accent, because time and time again, growing up, every time I said I was African, people were just like, no, you're not. I don't know why that was such an unbelievable but that's what happens when you grow up in a predominantly white culture and people are not exposed to other cultures. I don't know what's so wild about a dark-skinned Black girl saying that African, coming from a continent that has so much range in skin tones, specifically dark skin tones. You know, it's always something that was very interesting to me. But yeah, you know, we're seeing the same, like, even when we're dealing with issues of police brutality, being African doesn't save us.
And they don't get that. They don't understand that at all. They're the very same people that be like, why don't Black Americans just comply? You think if they complied, it would be the same thing? Like, no, it's not the same thing. And they just choose not to see race relations for what it is because they don't see it happening to them personally. Like, that's the problem. Nowadays, like, everybody just is so individualistic. Like, it's every man for themselves out here. Right. And if they don't see a problem, then in their eyes, the problem doesn't exist. But in reality, like, that's the very same mentality that a lot of racist white people use. Like, oh, I don't see racism, so therefore racism is not there, and everybody's just coming up with it in their head. Everybody's delusional. But, like, just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not happening. And that's what I had to explain to my family members, to my parents. Like, just because you've never experienced racism doesn't mean it's not happening. And the only reason why you haven't experienced racism is because, first of all, you just started a new generation of American kids. You need to understand what it's like to have people who've been in this country for generations. Black Americans who came as descendants from slaves, they understand what it's like. They've seen it firsthand. Your children gonna see it firsthand, but you are an immigrant. Like, you just came here. You've only been here for like a couple years. You don't understand the difference. Mind you, my parents have been here for like 20 years and they're just now starting to see, oh, well, it's because we're Black. Like, there's actual...
Yes!
Like, I'm like, 20 years, you didn't notice until now? Like, it's crazy. It's just really ridiculous.
And I think that, you know, because there's a lot of people out there that don't know how deep these issues lie because... Yeah, you know, you're all Black. Why are there so many issues? And it's because of that. It's because of that whole history of the cultures and the traditions. And we really have to get to a place and understand that in this country, we are on the same playing field.
Right.
We have to stand together to be able to bridge these inequalities, because it shouldn't be us versus each other. It should be us together versus these, you know, horrible and unjust systems. Because even on the, you know, immigration side of things, America is not fair to immigrants. And I think that is when I saw that it was starting to click for my family, when they started being treated, you know,
that's right,
differently. Like my mom, when we would go to the store sometimes, they would tell her, you know, we're not going to show you that because you can't afford it. And my mom was, you know, fuming, like, well, I'm an educated person, I work. And I said, you see that right there? I said, that's exactly what happens on the larger scale. And I said, you need to look at me and my brother, and you have to understand that when we step out, we don't even have the accent to back us up to say exactly. they're just seeing us as Black kids. Like, that's it. And I said, now imagine people that we don't know saying the very same things that you're saying, just looking at us and thinking that, oh, you know, they're lazy, they don't care about their lives. And my mom was like, oh no, absolutely not, this and that. And I said, that is why it's unfair. So really having to sit down and, you know, having to ask questions of where, what gave you that idea? Where did it come from? And a lot of it came from the movies and TV shows that the American TV shows and movies that they were watching back home that depicted African Americans in such a negative way. I mean, it's not even until now that we've been seeing better representation.
No, seriously.
In the media. And also, I think what really did it is when former President Barack Obama was president, because then it showed, oh my gosh,
we're black. Now we all Black, huh?
Okay. Yeah, and that was the most unity that I have seen in a hot while. For you, what would you say that you learned having these discussions with your parents and with your family members?
I've noticed that they only pay attention to these topics when it concerns immigration. They do not care about race relations at all. But when it comes to the immigration system, that's when they go and stand 10 toes down on everything that they believe in. And all of a sudden, oh, it's injustice. I also noticed that a lot of the times, like, it's just so much internalized racism in these, like, conversations that I'd be having with family members, especially the way that they address Black Americans and just how they view them in general. And I was actually having this conversation with my sister yesterday, because I've been seeing all over my For You page diaspora wars. But one thing that I've noticed is that it's never between, like, Black Americans and Africans like you and me, like African who've been born here and were raised here. We are not the problem. It's never been us. It's always the UK Africans, first of all. The European Africans, it's a whole other thing. And the older generation of Africans, it's always them. Our generation, we understand that we need to have unity in our community. And we also see the beauty within Black culture because, well, we were born and raised here and we see everything for what it is. There's no bias because we have had to adapt and understand all three cultures. So it's like, why would we beef with them? Only people that really hate Black Americans and Black culture for what it is are people who aren't a part of it. Like, they just can't experience it. And I noticed, like, it's always UK Africans. Like, there was one TikTok, this UK African TikToker made. He was like, why don't Black people ever say where they're from? He was talking about Black Americans and all the Black Americans.
And that's the problem, though. But that's the exact issue, because people do not understand and don't have the empathy and understanding that the impact, the implications of slavery, and why Black Americans don't know where they came from.
Exactly. And it's they just choose not to understand. And you have all these Black Americans constantly telling you, we don't know. Even if we try to do 23andMe, we will still never know. It's all going to be based off of generalization.
Even with the biggest thing that can prove it to you is the last name. A lot, when these slaves were brought here against their will, were forced to have their names changed for a variety of reasons. And that is, like, you know, because then with names you can trace it back much easier. But if your name is stripped from you, and then for generations and generations and generations to come, they were forced into not associating with the cultures that they came from.
Mm-hmm. And now it's bad because nowadays when Black Americans want to find out where they're from and they have just a little bit of knowledge on where they're from and they try to assimilate, you have the natives talking about someone, you can't do that because that's not your culture. And it's like, well, dang, what can they do without being ostracized from literally everyone? And in response to that UK TikToker's video, there was another TikToker like that I follow. He's African-American and he was talking about what Blackness means geographically. Like, Blackness in America is completely different from Blackness in the UK, Blackness in France. Yes. And it's because Blackness in America is a culture within itself. Whereas in Europe, it's literally just race. Like, race doesn't matter over there. That's what they say. Race doesn't matter over there. It's not that big of a thing. Especially because in the UK and Europe, a lot of those Black children are children of immigrants. And they're probably first, second gen. So it's not something that they really had to deal with. They don't understand what Black Americans gone through and their resilience and what that resilience created in the country.
And what they still have to continue. What we still have to continue exactly. through. In this country. Mm-hmm. So what do you think it's going to take to be able to shift these narratives?
I think accountability on both sides, honestly. Right. Growing up, like, I remember some of my first bullies were Black Americans. And it's like, if I were bitter, I grew up a bitter person, I would have ended up not liking Black Americans because I would have been like, those were my first bullies. Those are people, you look like me and you out here treating me like I'm different because of our cultures. Not understanding that there are many factors as to why African Americans have that, you know, resentment towards Africans. On top of this superiority complex that we carry, a lot of it is generational. Like, I remember I was learning about the terms of American exceptionalism, how it was when these slaves first came off the boat. Imagine you getting kidnapped from your home and a white man is telling you it's better that you're a slave here rather than in your home, and you carry on that mentality and it gets passed on to your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. So on top of the narratives that Africans have of African Americans, Black Americans also have the same negative connotations about Africans, you know. And you know, you expect that type of mentality from non-Black people, especially white people. Like, you tell them you're African and they're gonna be like, oh, y'all got water where you come from. You know what electricity is.
Yeah.
But it's surprising to hear that from Black Americans, but they still have that same mentality. And you know, Black Americans can roast. Like, they've mastered the art of roasting. So being roasted for being African by a Black person hurts a lot more than if I'm being roasted by a white person. Because first of all, they're not really creative. It's recycled over and over again. But Black people, they go change the roasts every single time. And it's like, dang, is the division is crazy, and it goes both sides, and we always respond to each other with hostility. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what it is, both sides will always respond with hostility and generalizations. It'll always be like, oh well, this is why Africans are this, that, and the third. This is why Black Americans are this, that, and the third. Like, I remember a couple months back on TikTok, there was a whole diaspora war over fufu, like,
which was wild.
We're trying
wild. For and the people who are listening, fufu is a common dish between different groups of people. It's a staple. And I never thought, I'm pretty sure G can agree with me on this one, I never in my life growing up, I never even talked about the food that I ate at home. So to see fufu all over social media was something that made me so happy on the inside, but so sad because it was something that I used to be so ashamed of growing up.
Exactly.
Not
bullied for your lunch. Now it's a trend, but it was crazy. Yes. Because the side of it that I stumbled upon was a bunch of Black Americans trying it, and they would be like, oh, this is disgusting. Oh, disgusting. Gross, gross, gross. Triggered some my fight or flight, I'm not even gonna lie, but I was more disappointed with the response from the Africans because, you know that you don't have to like our food. That's fine. For you to call it disgusting is a little excessive, but you don't have to like it. That's fine. But for Africans to respond with, well, at least we don't eat pig feet. At least you don't eat chitlins. You African Americans, you Black Americans just always talk, but your food is not any better. This and that, da, da, da. And I'm like, well, dang. Now I'm associated with a group of people that's low-key xenophobic because a group of them don't like our food. Like, it's never that serious.
And I think, you know, the most important thing to realize and to understand that is why I think that having these conversations is beyond important, because the language and mm-hmm. what we say and how we say things, it's not what you say, it's how you say things. Right. Because, again, like you're saying, no. And that goes for everyone's culture, right? When you're trying something for the first time, you're not expected to like it by default, but there's a way in which that you can still say what you are exactly. saying, then flat out saying, oh my gosh, you know, this is so disgusting, this is so nasty. Because at the same time, you have to have respect mm-hmm. for other people's cultures. And when you say that you're respectful of other people's cultures, it means the language that you use needs to be respectful. It's as simple as saying, mm-hmm. you know what? I don't like this dish. I'm not a fan of it because it's something that I'm not used to. The flavor is different. The texture, you know, is just awesome. It's not something that that I like. But, you know, using terms of like, oh my gosh, this is so disgusting, this is so nasty, like associating words and language mm-hmm. with such high disdain is also what causes further division on a multitude of levels, you know, because realistically, right, if with your friends, if you don't like your friend's hair or outfit, you're not telling them, "Ooh, girl, you look so ugly." Because right. why would you say that? That's rude, right? But you would say, you know, I think we should change the fit, or
you look better in this.
Right, maybe, you know, you say it nicely because why? You're operating from a level of, this is a person that I respect. This is a person mm-hmm. that I love. And if we keep that in the back of our heads when we are having these discussions, you know, the world will be a better place.
That's true. But like, I feel like we can't have respect where there's hostility. You feel me? We're always looking to fight with each other, and we just have to stop. And it's bad because a lot of the times it's easier said than done, especially when you're a Black American, you've had bad experiences with Africans. It's hard not to generalize. If you've been done dirty time and time again by a person that belongs to a specific community, you're obviously going to associate those bad experiences with
them. And that's the key part. And that's what we have to stop doing. We have to stop generalizing. When you experience, that is one of the things that I've learned in my 21 years of life, is mm-hmm. that the biggest way to keep engaging in these conversations and still staying sane and an ally and for the cause is to, you have to keep your experiences individual, specifically and most importantly the negative ones. You cannot be grouping negative experiences. You really have to say that this was a negative experience that I had with this individual and not the group as a whole.
Right.
Even if it's multiple experience with that same set individual or a different individual, those were, you know, individualized experiences with the same mentality, but we cannot be generalizing. I feel like once we can stop ourselves from doing that, like you said, we will remove the hostility to create the environment necessary to have these productive conversations.
That's true. And, you know, we also just have to be honest with each other. I honestly feel like being born and raised here, I see both sides. And sometimes I'm divided on which side I should take, my African side or, you know, my American side. But I see that, me personally, I believe that Black Americans are the most hated group of people in the entire world. Like, from literally every corner, they're always hated. And to have all those TikToks on my For You page, all those Instagram posts, like, just seeing it from the perspective of African Americans all the time, it just feels like they're tired. They're just tired of being berated, especially from the very people that, you know, they come from the motherland. You're supposed to be showing us the way. You're supposed to be, you know, the first people we look up to, you feel me? But it's like, I feel like personally, African-Americans feel like Africans turn their backs on them. Like, y'all just left us to fend for ourselves, and now you're mad that we don't know how to live our lives. Like, where were you when we needed you? But then again, it's like, well, Africans were dealing with their own problems here. On top of that, like, I feel like everyone has a main character complex, like, oh, our country's the best, our country's the best. Like, right. Even like, some African-Americans think that way. So it's like, we need to appreciate everyone's culture equally for what it is. It's okay to have biases. I have biases too. I feel like where I come from, we lit, we like that. But I understand that Black Americans, Black culture is where it's at. Nigerian culture, where it's at. You know, I appreciate everything for what it is.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sit down
and be like, we're the best in the world because we done this, that, and the third. You feel me? But like, especially with this new wave of music and, you know, entertainment, like, now everybody wants to be Nigerian, everyone wants to be Jamaican, but it's like, in 10 years tops, it's going to go to South Africa, or it's going to go to Ethiopia, because it's something that society likes. So it's like, you know, your position on where you're at now is not going to stay like that forever. So you can't just treat everybody like they're less than you because you at the top right now. And we just have to understand it for what it is. Like, we are all the same. We should not be fighting each other. We need to be fighting the issues within the community without looking and pointing fingers, and take accountability. Like, it's not hard. It's really not, but
absolutely
emotional maturity for that. So
absolutely. I mean, thank you so much for everything, you know, you had to say, and for being on this episode and, you know, sharing your wisdom and your experiences. Because, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of willful immigration or involuntary enslavement, in this country, we are all Black. And right. If there's one thing that you should take away from this conversation, it should be that we are not each other's enemies, nor should we be. And unity can exist without each other being the same.
Right.
So if you are hearing this message right now, it means that you've listened to the entire episode. And for that, I would like to thank you all so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode just as much as we did. So until next time, keep conversing, keep engaging, and never stop learning.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to the inclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.